Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Gillian Gosnell. Today, my guest is Alexandra Mitrovic, who is the CEO of Unique Networks, the NFT blockchain space. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, I was going through your LinkedIn profile last night. You have a strong tech background. I know you have the use tech, which is, I want to get to that bit later on, that's interesting. But also, you've been an investor and an entrepreneur. Which side of the table do you prefer to sit on?
Well, I am an entrepreneur. That's my bread and butter. I'm an entrepreneur in tech space. I've been in tech space for more than 20 years. I understand it. I have learned how to understand it without actually knowing what's really underneath, but understand the tech, understand the limitations, understand the opportunities. But I'm more than anything an entrepreneur. That's my job.
Okay, and then with your business use tech, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people come to projects and then they have to run around and find the dev team. But you actually came with your own dev team with use tech. Tell me a bit about that company.
I spent before that 10 years at Luxoft, which is also a software development company, which I helped kind of build into a big unicorn. And Ustech was founded by my friend from Luxoft days, who's done its Russia business. So I came in to kind of develop global operations for that. But yeah, that was one of the advantages we had. I built the blockchain lab at Ustech back in 2017 with Greg, our kind of CTO now. We did so many projects for companies all over the globe on kind of various blockchains that we use that to learn, and even the Polkadot experience comes from that, by us kind of doing stuff that we thought they need or that they needed and so on, and then we realized that the NFT infrastructure that we started to kind of look at or build and so on, it seems like a good product to have. So we come from the services side of things.
Okay. Well, it is interesting because I do interview other projects and I say one of the big problems they have is they can't get the devs. So it's interesting that you have all this experience, you're building blockchain solutions. And I know that with the Luxoft, you grew that from like 30 employees up to a Fortune 500 business. So obviously very successful there. When you looked at blockchain, when did the penny drop for you that this is going to be a transformational technology and you wanted in?
This was, 2016. So I joined then Ustech and I was looking actually at multiple cutting edge technologies at the time, looked at AI, looked at big data, looked at kind of various things. And a friend of mine, who I knew from her previous startup, Zoya Adamowicz. I know her, connected on Facebook as well. She started posting some stuff about Ethereum, about smart contracts, about how cool that is and so on. And I know she is, I know her as a very smart and kind of very successful entrepreneur. She sold her company. She made a wonderful company that she sold for, I guess good money. I don't know. It's somebody I listen to. So I'm like, okay, so what's this kind of blockchain thing? And I started digging. And after a few months, I realized that I understand it well. I understand it better than most people would. And it does have the potential to become something mainstream that, I was there for Web 1 to Web 2 migration and the kind of transformation. And I realized that this will be you know, a wave for the 10, 20 years to build out the Web 3.0. And so I saw the potential, but it's thanks to her. She was the kind of the first.
That's good to know. And then when you were looking at your blockchains, how did Substrate rear its ugly head? Like, what did you say, aha, this is what I want to build on, and the Polkadot system, the parachains, Kusama, what drew you there as opposed to maybe Ethereum or EOS or, you know?
So we worked on a number of chains, and a lot of them are very good, okay? But I have 20 years of experience looking at different technologies and comparing them with others in the same field, et cetera, and seeing, looking at trends. I spend a lot of time doing that. And we started looking at, during, you know, crypto winter 2018 and early 19, everybody was looking, you know, for the next thing. So what's going to drive content and so on. And we're looking at various new chains and various new solutions, looked at Aragon, looked at IOSD, looked at number of chains. We worked on EOS, we worked on NEM, we worked on a number of them, but they were all very similar. They're all either faster, or they were kind of safer, or they were kind of, you know, looking at things from different angle, but they were not transformational at all. Ethereum has the main asset, which is the network effect of the community, and everybody's using it. So it is very hard to kind of compete with that if you're doing the same thing. So we looked at Cosmos, and we looked at Polkadot that started appearing in like 2018, and then in 2019 we were like, okay, let's try it out. They had the nice Web3 Foundation had a nice kind of grant program for builders to start off. And we saw that it was kind of infrastructure building time. There's a lot of things to be built. So we said, okay, let's try it out. Greg came up with a few APIs that were needed, and they were needed. And we started building them. When I dove into Polkadot, I said, okay, this is technology so complex, my head hurts after months and months of kind of working in it, reading about it, thinking about it, and so on, still hurts, still is complicated. But at the same time, it had all the components of something completely new. And as we started digging, I think the biggest moment was when we built actually the first NFT palette. Then things kind of really came together, and I could formulate what makes Polkadot so attractive. So it is very powerful technology. It is, you know, maybe it's not the most powerful blockchain out there. Telegram guys kind of, Graham guy says we are much better, and maybe it's so. But actual power of Polkadot comes in, and Substrate comes in from the flexibility it came in. It's not only fast. It's not only kind of scalable and things like that. It cannot only do kind of a lot of good things with smart contracts, blah, blah, blah. But it actually brings in some innovation into blockchain space that is truly transformational. And it's all about flexibility. It starts with interoperability, okay, where it doesn't say we are the blockchain, we are kind of who will dominate the world. It says future is multi-chain, and we are kind of just part of that, and we are kind of building that future, okay? So, that's the first kind of philosophical, but also practical kind of very good technical approach. Then you have the most important, it begins with a structure where Polkadot or Kusama, they're relay chains where they don't do anything except for mining. And then they enable parachains that that have functionality. Okay. And those parachains can have their complete kind of independence in terms of economics or anything else. They can choose what to do, what not to do, and so on. But basically, you have a powerful, and they give you powerful tools to do that. And they become very interoperable, but they're separate. So for NFT space, for example, the problem that NFT space has in Ethereum is they're in the same bundle with Ethereum guys, with the DeFi guys, okay? And DeFi guys can put in billions of dollars for, you know, in financial applications in DeFi, and, you know, you cannot compete with them for very limited space you have there for transaction fees and so on. So you have the problem here. We don't have that problem. We have our own NFT world. That's it. But then the most kind of important thing, if you ask me, is the forkless upgrades. So most of the blockchain space, all of the blockchain space, if you take Ethereum, if they do two upgrades a year, it's a big deal. Everybody writes about it. Everybody talks about it. You know, it's a big deal. In Polkadot, you have updates every week, sometimes even two times a week. They can have it anytime
actually
they want.
It makes sense. In software development, it's not so static and clunky that you do it twice a year.
Of course, software is not an industry. It's not a building, you know, that you, you can, you know, or a car that you have to maintain every, you know, 6 months. Software needs to be built continuously. Polkadot has struck a great balance between making it technically firm and trustless and kind of organizationally as well. Parity is a very kind of smart and committed organization to the world of decentralization, and the way they've structured governance around those things is as important, okay, is to make it really trustless and so on. So basically, you can have a blockchain that keeps improving every day, and that's what we want, right?
That's a good tagline.
You know, and for NFTs are what? They're unique assets. You have to have, and to manage unique assets technically, you have to have a very powerful and flexible infrastructure in place that can manage all very efficiently and simply so many different use cases you use them for. They're not, you know, fungible tokens are money. They are easy, you know, they're simple. They are just representation of a value, that's it. And they float around and you do all kinds of stuff on top of that. But the unique assets, each one of them is unique. So you have to have technologies that can manage that. It's the way I compare it is for fungible assets are good, like for when we had Web 1 era, very simple technology, but you can kind of do a lot of information, okay? You can send a lot of emails, no problem. If you want Facebook, you needed Web 2, okay? And for unique assets, you need much more powerful infrastructure, and Polkadot enables that. That was the key.
And since it's only since 2020 January, so it's only a year and a half you've been involved here, but you've got, I was going through the list of accolades, you've got no less than five Web3 grants.
That was in 2019.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then two Hakusama Awards. You created the first NFT collectibles on Substrate, and you're on the strategy team for Kusama NFTs. So you are totally, you're all in here. This is an all-in play. So with going back to the NFTs, so this is something that is driving your attention and where you're working at. I'd like to hear your opinion of static NFTs and why you think they're dated already.
Well, static NFTs are great for collectibles. Okay, that's a very valid use case. A lot of people are collecting a lot of stuff. You know, people collect stamps, people collect coins, people collect all kinds of things, okay, in their lives. That's a hobby for a lot of people. For some, it's a very passionate hobby. But that's it, okay? The collectibles are very small part of the human kind of interaction, so That's what, you know, that's what we have today. So the next thing, unique assets, if you take a look at the around you, they're not just stamps or coins. There are us, the identity. There are real estate, cars, not static, moving objects, live objects, and so on. So we are just at the beginning of the journey this way. You know, this is just the first use case.
And gaming is also important to you, freemium gaming. Tell me what are your thoughts on that, and what can the Polkadot ecosystem deliver?
Well, gaming has been talked about as one of the kind of big potentials for blockchain technology, because it deals with digital assets, right? Most of the gaming is electronic, it is very relatively easy for it to adopt blockchain if they wanted to, okay, or if the blockchain offered them something. Today, what we have in gaming world and blockchain is collectibles. Again, you know, that's basically what blockchain is used for. What we are trying to do is we are trying to create infrastructure for the next generation of games, where basically you can create any kind of game on blockchain. The problem there is the fact that, I don't know, 80-90% of the gaming industry is working in a freemium model. That's just simply the way everybody's used to. Everybody who's listening to this has played their games on mobile, and 90% of them are, or 100% of them are freemium. They start playing, and then if they really like the game, they pay either because they want something in the game or because they like the developers and want to kind of say, you know, they deserve their money, type of a thing. I don't know if any, my son plays games all the time, and I haven't seen him play a game that has to be paid initially for, except for Minecraft. That was on mobile device. But that was a good one. That one deserved to be paid. So this prevalence of the freemium model, you cannot take it to blockchain, because in blockchain, user has to pay for transaction fees.
Yeah.
They're small, you know, they're supposed to be small. And they're small, okay, everywhere except on Ethereum. But so in order to do anything, you have to pay those transaction fees. Nobody's, you know, accustomed to that economically, but even more importantly, you know, psychologically and knowledge-wise, okay? You need to get those tokens. You need to be motivated to get those tokens to figure out what the hell crypto is, what are the wallets and all of that stuff. So it is a very big barrier there that sits. And we have seen NBA Top Shots did a great job in removing that barrier under the hood. Okay. That was an excellent example for the collectibles industry. It works fantastic. Okay. Here what we are working on and what we have done is the infrastructure that enables any game to use a freemium model on blockchain. Okay. Transaction fees in blockchain are there to manage the security of the network, or it's spam, most importantly, so that you don't take in and put in a lot of whatever into the blockchain, because it has limited space. It is a security environment. And everybody uses transaction fees for that as economic incentives. But in games, it's not like that. It doesn't work like that. You have to use something else. And something else is simple registration. You know, you create a whitelist from that. You maybe add rate limiting, and that's it. That's all you need, basically. And then you can manage game producers are probably the best economists in the world. I think, you know, most of the gaming studios are better economists than, you know, people in the managing economies across the globe or in the banks and so on, because they live with that every day. They measure every single parameter in a game and when you can optimize and so on. There's a very kind of sharp focus on that. So if they're good at it, why would blockchain space try to put them in a very opinionated environment where they have to live in just one economic framework where a user has to pay the fees? You just get, so what we do is we give them ability to manage that economic environment any way they want. Okay, they can sponsor the transaction fees for their players as long as they want, for any kind of transaction they want, or not do that. They can change their minds, they can change things around and so on. So we created a technology that's not opinionated on that front at all.
And that's where you talk about your advanced economic models. So the dApps that are built on top are going to be able to absorb the fees of the transactions if required.
Yeah. So the idea here is that, again, the function of the transaction fee is twofold. One is to protect the network from unwanted behavior. And the game producer can do that. They can say, you know, I will give this sponsorship to the guy who is registered. I know who he is. And I can limit him to 30 transactions per day or per month or whatever. And it's very easy to do. It's not like, you know, they have to develop for a month something. It's, you know, it's very easy to set up. And then, you know, they are the second kind of importance of transaction fees is provides the revenue for providing that security and so on. So inconvenient truth is that except if you are Ethereum or Bitcoin, nobody else is really kind of paying any attention to transaction fees as a kind of revenue generation. Nobody is. You have to be very popular, okay, and used a lot. So if initially all your transaction fees are doing is they are preventing that growth from happening, okay? So what we do is we help projects kind of initially grow, show that they're important, show that they can monetize, show that they can work, show that they're popular or whatever. And then, you know, and then transaction fees start to kick in kind of as a kind of a reward, but not kind of upfront gatekeeping functionality.
Okay. So tell me then about the, with the going back to the NFTs, right? You're talking about flexible NFT ownerships and true NFT interoperability. What are you doing there?
Oh, those are two things, two different things, and each of them world of their own. So on the first front, nested NFTs or kind of flexible ownerships and so on, the NFTs are representation of unique assets, okay? Take a look at the real estate, okay? A house, okay? That can be tokenized. But you can have a building, you know, and then what you need, what you have in a building is apartments. So in order to create a real estate ledger, you need a little bit more, you know, a little bit smarter kind of setup than just kind of one writing of the, you know, of the ownership. You need to have relationships between the apartments in the building and the building itself, for example, or parcels of lands and houses on them, or be it real estate in the real world or in a metaverse, okay, in a game, in the central land and so on. So creating those types of solutions require infrastructure that can support that. And you know, we support that. That's as simple as that. Now, actually, that's being worked on mostly by our partner team, Remark. They are doing some awesome work in nested NFTs, and we hope that together we'll kind of deploy that on Unique and kind of have it done, because their way is just great. You asked the second question there about interoperability.
Yes.
Interoperable NFTs. Okay. Now that's another question. It is different technologically and kind of different question and different answer. Because interoperability is enabled by first kind of common standards and secondly by bridges or integration technologies that allow them to move around. Beautiful thing about Polkadot, as I said in the beginning, their first kind of main point is that future is multi-chain and they're building stuff for that. So first thing we have is EVM inside. So you can build on Solidity. You can kind of use this, you know, your skill sets in Solidity, in Ethereum, and the standards are the same. So you can move, you can kind of have, you have the same standards. And then in terms of bridging, it also is becoming very interesting times. I think that, well, this year we're starting seeing bridges, and the next few years are going to be we're going to see explosion of multi-chain solutions coming on the market. We're already working with a number of them. So Chainlink is working on cross-chain kind of NFT solution. There are projects working on, XP Network is working on a solution that allows you to mint NFTs on any chain you want, basically. So if you're artists, you can come into their solution and say, okay, today, this collection, I want to mint here. I want to mint on Solana. I want to mint it on Binance Chain or whatever. It's a very cool thing. So so in that future, we will be one of the chains, you know, and with the only kind of small, I guess, and I hope, advantage that we are designed from the start to be in the multi-chain environment. So we like that. We're not against that. We support that and we're working on that.
Okay. You also have done your Substra Punks and your Cello Bricks. So like they're just kind of mad things. Were you influenced by CryptoPunks? Is that the idea to say, let's do one, but on a different chain?
Sure. The idea was, okay, we needed something we participated in that hackathon. That's when we launched the unique network for the first time, our first testnet. And we wanted something to demo it, okay, to show it off. So we went to talk with the CryptoPunk guys, and they were like, that would be cool if CryptoPunks would be on another network. But you have to maintain the ownership of the original ones. And I fully support that. But we couldn't do that back then because we needed the full kind of Ethereum compatibility, wasn't ready, and so on. So I was like, doesn't work. So okay. Then we came, you know, Greg came up, our CTO came up with, okay, well, let's make our own and we'll make it a tribute to CryptoPunks. So that's what they are. They're basically a tribute to a very early project that basically they came in before ERC 721. They are kind of, and art-wise, they are very, very nice. I like their aesthetics and everything, and I fully think they deserve what they became, basically, as a symbol of the crypto world and so on. So our Substra Punks are basically a tribute to that. That's all. But for us, it was just a demo. It wasn't kind of a project. It wasn't a project at all. It wasn't supposed to be popular or kind of used in any way and so on. When we designed it, it was just a demo that the chain works on a hackathon. That's it.
So you're quoted as saying that and this is to do with tokenomics and public sales, and you're saying the token price is not our focus. Our focus is on creating value. So what is the roadmap in terms of monies?
We have to be focused on our job is to build. It is other people's jobs to market, to trade, to kind of assign value to something. It's very important to distinguish between those two things. So in terms of our roadmap, we are now preparing for a launch. Polkadot has this cousin network, Kusama, who goes first. It's a cannery network. So we're creating our cannery network and that will hopefully go live in the next few months as a parachain on Kusama. We would like to decentralize ownership of unique networks tokens. So the way we, but I don't want to do a public sale until the tokens have utility. For me, you know, that was kind of something I committed to myself back in 2017, because otherwise it's a security token. You use that to finance the development of the network. You can, you know, which is not a utility token, it's a security token. Anyway, so because of that, we want to make a public sale for Unique Network on our Kusama Cannery network. By that time, it will be a live chain. It will have all the technical components needed for that. You can make any kind of smart contracts there. You can make, you can add KYC to that, and you can make a substrate token that can be exchanged for Unique Network when it goes live. So you know, it has kinds of components. So that would be a second event, and then after that, hopefully, we go for the parachain slot on Polkadot.
And will that happen within like 6 months, a year, or?
So that is not something I can answer because it doesn't depend on us. It depends on Parity when they launch. It depends on technology, how well it works. It depends on all the ecosystem projects, who is better than us in kind of attracting enough money for the parachain slots and so on. So it's a very kind of it's an environment where which we can influence very little. But we are very hopeful that the Kusama parachain slot will be able to secure in the next 2 or 3 months. And then the Polkadot comes after that. You know, it's too early to say. We don't know yet when are they going to start launching that. And Polkadot auctions and everything will be much slower than on Kusama. Because everything is, you know, block times are the only thing that's same in terms of speed. Everything else is, you know, two to six times kind of faster on Kusama. So it will take time. How long, we don't know.
Okay, final question for you today, Alex. You're also, I'm also quoting you here. You say there are no challenges, only opportunities. How does that motivate your work and Unique Network?
Well, it is one of the reasons why I love doing what I'm doing, is because everything in the crypto space is new, okay? Especially what we are doing. You don't have entrenched players with territory that you have to compete with to kind of overcome or things like that. We are in Wild West era, where basically the land is free, open, and you need to just go find where the land is good and claim that land and start building on it. That's the point of time where we are now. Okay. And there is still a lot of stuff to be built, still a lot of stuff to be made. And so the challenge is to find a piece of land that you understand that you can kind of quickly turn into something that produces food for everybody else. That's the analogy I use.
Okay, we're going to farm. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. We'll be watching your progress with interest. Thank you indeed.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.